Welcome to number 16.
We looked at all these things before from the Grecian part. Now he may be a Jew, but if you can identify Antichrist with King of the North, then he comes from that area that we presently know as Iraq, Syria, Iran. Could it be that Antichrist could come from that geographical area? I don't know. There are divided opinions here on this. Let's look at verse 40. At the end time, this is Jack Van Impe's position and others. At the end time, the king of the south will collide with him, that is Antichrist, and the king of the north, another person, will storm against him, that is Antichrist, with chariots, with horsemen and many ships, and he, Antichrist, will enter countries, overflow them, and pass through. So the Jack Van Impe group, those people see three individuals here. Now, if we look at it grammatically, we may just see two people here. And at the end time, the king of the south will collide with him, that is Antichrist. And the king of the north, Antichrist, will storm against him, the king of the south, with chariots. And if we look at this grammatically, the closest antecedent to him is the king of the south. So now we have two people. He has been the little horn, he's been the prince, he's been the king, now he's the king of the north. And that geographical focus narrows down, and maybe his religious ethnic background narrows down. We don't know. All I'm doing here is showing you the two schools of thought. You can make up your own mind through your own study, but it's very possible. Grammatically, it holds up. So let's go on now, and 41 through 45 give us some additional detail about what Antichrist is going to do in the tribulation period. And I want to give you some cross-references you can write down. Ezekiel chapters 38 and 39 have to do with this activity. We learn in there, in verse 44, rumors will come from the east and the north to disturb Antichrist. Remember that in Revelation 16, 12, the Euphrates is dried up. 200 million march from the east against Antichrist. China? They could certainly put 200 million people on the battlefield. Rumors from the east. Russia, rumors from the north coming against him. So he gets back up out of here, moves his army up as these other armies are coming against him. A lot of activity. This is not the Battle of Armageddon. Antichrist is going to rule the world, but people aren't just going to fall at his feet. There's military activity going on all the time. There are battles going on, all right, during this time period. So this is what's going on here. Now chapter 12. Now at that time, what time? The midpoint of the tribulation period. Man, the great tribulation starts. The last half of the tribulation at that time, Michael will stand up for your people because, as verse 1 says, there will be a time of distress such as never occurred since there was a nation until that time. And at that time, your people, everyone who is found written in the book, will be rescued. So these must be those who have listened to the evangelistic message of the 144,000 Jewish evangelists during the tribulation period. And apparently God does have a book of some kind with these names in it. We look at the various resurrections that will take place at the end of the tribulation period. And here we have mention of two resurrections, one at the end of the tribulation, the other really at the end of the millennium. Many have misunderstood this verse to be a single resurrection, but it's really not. Verse 2, chapter 12. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the ground will awake, these to everlasting life, but the others to disgrace and everlasting contempt. Two groups of people. Many who sleep in the dust of the ground, speaking of the Israelites. Many will awake. Not all, many. When do they awake? At the end of the tribulation period, Isaiah chapter 26. Those who awake at the end of the tribulation period will awake to everlasting life. But the others who do not awake at the end of the tribulation will awake, that's implied, to disgrace and everlasting contempt 1,000 years later at the great white throne judgment. Two categories of people. Believing Israelites, believing Old Testament people, from all the way down back to Seth, Adam, Eve, all right, down. So we have two categories of resurrection. Verse 3, a synonymous parallelism here. And those who have insight will shine brightly like the brightness of the expanse of heaven, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. Soul winners in the tribulation. Jewish soul winners in the tribulation. Kind of a play on Proverbs 11:30. He that winneth souls is wise. Now we have the work of the Jewish evangelists from Revelation 7:4, when those 144,000 are sealed, doing the work they're supposed to do, leading Jews and the tribulation people to Messiah, and as a result, they will shine like the brightness of the expanse of heaven. Verse 4, but you, Daniel, conceal these words and seal up the book until, here's this terminology again, the end of time. What that really means is, it means what it says, conceal it until the end of time. You know the interesting thing? Probably it was only about 80 years ago that we began to have a lot of information about eschatology, when people really began to get interested in prophecy. Schofield Bible. Then the Jews came back to the land in 1948. There was a renewed interest that had never been there in prophetic things. Hal Lindsey, the great planet Earth. That caused a stir. And from that time till now, there's been an interest in prophecy. I think we're in the end time. No one really paid much attention to the book of Daniel for 1900 years. And now suddenly, eyes are focused on Daniel. Eyes are focused on Ezekiel 38, 39. Eyes are focused on Revelation. And many will go back and forth. Another misunderstood verse. Certainly, many are going back and forth today, aren't they? But that phrase in the original really means many will search diligently. Doesn't really mean go back and forth. Many will search diligently. And what's the result of this searching diligently? Knowledge will increase. What's the mark of the end time? The mark of the end time is no one's going to pay attention to this book for a long time. Then suddenly down toward the end time, many are going to start to search diligently. And when many start to search diligently, knowledge is going to increase. And we'll be hearing a class like this, comparing Scripture with Scripture, comparing historical events and current events with Scripture, and we'll begin to put things together and say, we're a lot smarter now than we were before. Because we think now we can begin to know generally when things may happen. Or at least when things start to happen, we can identify them when they do happen. So as we go on down through here, he looks up, and this divine person is still above the river. He's been the silent witness to everything that's gone on to ensure the transmission of the truth. The same one he saw is still there. And now this divine being raises his hand and says, this will last for a time, times, and half a time, 3.5 years. And we know that from Revelation. Verse 8, as for me, can we sympathize with Daniel here? I heard but couldn't understand. That's how I feel. I can read it, but I don't understand it. Isn't it good to know that even prophets don't understand? The very end of the book, I don't understand. I said, my Lord, what will be the outcome of these events? And he said, well, these words are concealed. Many will be purged and refined. And from the time the regular sacrifice is abolished, the midpoint of the tribulation period, these are probably the two toughest verses in the entire Old Testament. From the time the regular sacrifice is abolished, we know that's the midpoint of the tribulation period, because in verse 7, he said it's going to be 3.5 years after that. That's how long it's going to last. And the abomination of desolation said that there will be 1,290 days. Well, we know it's 1,260 days. So suddenly we have 30 extra days in here. When we say, Daniel, don't you mean 1,260 days? No, 1,290 days. What are the extra 30 days do? I don't know. It's possible we looked before at the various judgments that will take place at the end of the tribulation period. Jesus even said to his disciples, especially James, you're going to judge the tribes of Israel. When the tribulation is over, there will be a tribunal. The Christians, those born again who were raptured, will already have been judged at the Bema Seat, 2 Corinthians 5:10. But those who come out of the tribulation period, those resurrected at the end of the tribulation period, those from verse 2 will be judged. As in Matthew 25, we learn the sheep and the goats are divided. The goats, off into everlasting punishment, killed and sent into hell, the living sheep into the millennial kingdom. It may take 30 days for that on God's timetable. That may be what the extra 30 days will be for. And look at this, verse 12, how blessed is he who keeps waiting and attains to the 1,335 days. We thought 1,290 days was bad. Now we have 1,335. So now we have 75 extra days. We have the 30 days that may be for the judgment, and 45 more days. Well, for the millennial kingdom, we know God is going to set up an organizational hierarchy. There will be an organizational chart for the millennial kingdom with headquarters in Jerusalem. And that may be the extra 45 days. But we don't know. But that's certainly as good a guess as any for what those mean. And now what a blessed statement to Daniel, verse 13. But as for you, go your way to the end of your life. Then you will enter into rest. Well, that's a nice statement. And rise again. He's assured that he'll be one of those in verse 2. Rise again to your allotted portion at the end of the age. So not only will he rise again, he's assured of having a position of prominence and authority in the new millennial kingdom because he'll have an allotted portion.
This concludes number 16.